Hey guys, this is Kenan Thompson. I have a problem with you. Yes, you. None of y'all told me that Auto Trader has millions of new and used cars that I can shop from home. I thought we were friends. I put smiles on your face, but I'm not smiling. No one told me that with Auto Trader, a dealer can deliver cars to my home or that I could shop by price on Auto Trader. No one. Consider this friendship that you just learned we had officially over. Finally, it's easy. Auto Trader.
We continue. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. The NCAA tournament is here. 8th seed Iowa up against 9th seed Auburn in Birmingham for the first round of the NCAA tournament Thursday at 6:50 p.m. Eastern. And now joining us is the head coach at Auburn and Bruce Pearl, who, by the way, is a member of the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame. And the home of the Jewish Sports Hall of Fame is the Suffolk YJCC on Long Island in Commack. And that was actually my gym growing up when I was in high school. So I would see Coach Pearl's face each and every day on the wall. Coach, appreciate the time. How you been?
Zach, I tell you what, that's about as good an introduction as I've had in a long time. I've been on a lot of Wall of Shames. There aren't many, you know, Hall of Fames that I've been on. So, yeah, I remember that was a very, very special time to be inducted.
Well, it's great to have you back on the show. We were talking a lot about your team last year with Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler. Now both those guys are off in the pros. Your team is back in the NCAA tournament. They hit the 20-win mark once again. What does it say about this group with what they lost that they were still able to get back to the big dance?
It says a lot about our program. It really does. It says a lot about the guys that returned. It said a lot about the newcomers. It said a lot about the staff. Zach, it's in life and in basketball, it's easier to get there than it is to stay there. And so getting there this year wasn't easy. We played a really tough schedule. Only three teams in college basketball had more appearances against the field than Auburn did. And we took some tough losses and some last-second defeats, but the body of work was good enough to get us a 9 seed, get us 20 wins, get us back in, and a lot of teams aren't playing for anything, and we're still playing for a national championship.
When you got to Auburn, you knew the task at hand. They wanted to have some consistency. They didn't see an NCAA tournament since 2003. The program has only been to the tournament now 12 times, since 2018. Just how do you kind of describe where the state of your program is and what you guys have built?
Well, it's good. It's great. You know, you make history not once, but you make it over a period of time. And so I would like to see us, you know, continue to make history. It's what we ask our players to do when they come here. You know, I got to tell you, Zach, so often when former athletes come back to their old coaches or to the old universities, 100% of them say, you know, I wish I would have, and then you fill in the blank. And sometimes it was just life lessons that they didn't realize they were learning when they were going through it, and they might have done something differently. Sometimes it might have been the way they trained or realizing that this was an incredibly special time. So take advantage of the opportunity, and can you have one shining moment? And, you know, because here's what happens. At the end of a season in March, we're tired. It's been a grind. We've been at this since this team got together right after Memorial Day. And you got to find a way, in spite of the competition and the challenges, to elevate your game and to play your best basketball at the end. Because to the victor go the spoils. And the spoils are so incredible at this time of the year.
Bruce Pearl, you guys got off to a great start at 16-3. I know things haven't gone your way down the stretch, 4-9 down the stretch. Where's the confidence of this group as they head into the NCAA tournament on Thursday?
You know, Zach, part I didn't actually even really know those numbers, and so thank you for ruining my morning. You know what? It all had to do with the competition. You know, we played a good non. We played six teams in the field in a non-conference. We played three true road games against Power 5 teams in non-conference, the only Power 5 club to do that. I think it had more. If you look at those nine losses, most of it had to do with the competition and being on the road and everything. But it does affect your confidence. That's a great question. And so my message to this team, and look, the work's done, and we are prepared. Let's take advantage of the opportunity.
What are the positives that you could take still, like with the way that the team has played the last month or two? Like, what are you seeing from your view?
Well, hey, look, we played Alabama for 85 minutes. We lost to them at Alabama in overtime. They're like housing people there. Their average margin of victory for Alabama at home this year was 20-25, something like that. And we took them to overtime. I think we led Alabama for maybe 67 of the 85 minutes, and right now they're number one seed in the tournament. So if we're good enough to be able to play with them, or lose to Tennessee in a last possession and beat Tennessee at our place, or things like that, I can point to some games and go, guys, we are prepared, and there's no better way of building confidence than feeling like you're prepared.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Alabama games because you guys did an exceptional job on Brandon Miller. We know how great of a player he is. Only hit 1 3-pointer in the 2 games he played in, had 17 and 13. And like you mentioned, Coach Bruce Pearl, one of those games went to overtime. I guess you guys have a little bit of the secret sauce up against them. What was the keys in kind of containing him?
They're big games. And I don't know that we got any secret sauce against them. You got to be competitive against your rivalry. They swept us this year, so I don't feel like I got anything secret. But look, he's better from 3 than 2, and so you got to make him put the ball down the floor and then take your chances from there. You give him space and time, and he's gonna make you pay.
For you, Bruce Pearl, why was Jani Broome such a good fit for you guys transferring over from Morehead State?
Well, what a great fill in. My son Steven did a great job recruiting Jani and his family. When you lose Walker Kessler, who was a National Defensive Player of the Year, an All-American, first-team All-Conference performer, and obviously having his game has translated to the NBA a lot better than most people thought it would, not me, not our program. You talk about big shoes to fill now. Holy cow. And I think Jani has done a great job filling those shoes. He's probably scored it better than Walker scored it for us. Walker was one of the greatest shot blockers in the history of college basketball. But Jani does a good job protecting the rim. He's a really good overall player. He understands how to pass. He can shoot the ball. He communicates well. He's kind of an old school, big. Kind of a dinosaur, if you will. But that old-fashioned stuff, still really works. And then Jalen Williams, who played behind Jabari last year. A lot of guys in that situation would have transferred when you bring in somebody like Jabari. He stayed the course. He competed with Jabari, challenged him every day in practice. And we went to the bench with Jalen Williams. We didn't drop off that much. And then Jalen's taken advantage of the opportunity this year and been one of the better power forwards in the SEC.
When you look at someone like Jani, I was talking to John Becker yesterday at Vermont, and he was like, the transfer portal's kind of like speed dating. I guess you don't really know if a guy's going to mesh, but what do you kind of see him? What do you kind of talk about with your staff to know if the guy will be a good fit for Auburn and what you guys are trying to do?
Well, you know what? You study the film, Zach. While it is a transfer portal, there's film out on all these guys, and we spend a lot of time evaluating talent. One of the things that you don't do with transfers, you can't make mistakes with transfers. Not that you can make mistakes with freshmen, but freshmen are young. They got time to develop, and they still have that one-time transfer exception if things don't work out. Now, I don't have many guys transfer from Auburn. That's just not been our DNA. That could change with the transfer portal, but that's just not been who we've been. People come here, tend to want to stay here. But on a transfer, you better make certain that you've got playing time, you've got the right style of play, and the right opportunity. And so we studied Morehead State and studied to the credit of their coaches when we were recruiting Jani. While they were disappointed he was leaving, they did a wonderful job explaining to us who he was and who he wasn't, so that we knew had a pretty good idea of what we were getting and whether or not it would be a fit. And I do think it's really important that coaches only take transfers if they can help them, because this is it for them.
On the way out with Bruce Pearl, so you got Iowa 8-9 matchup coming up on Thursday. Good draw for you guys since the fact that it's in Birmingham, but a heck of a team in Iowa. It all starts with Chris Murray. I know you know the family very well, going back to your days, Coach, at Iowa. Just what jumps off to the page at a McCaffrey squad for you?
Well, but like you said, Chris Murray jumps off the page for sure. I recruited his dad, I helped recruit his dad, and Kenyon Murray is one of the all-time greatest players in Iowa basketball history. You know, such a versatile player, three-way scorer, did it on both ends of the floor, tough kid, and an unbelievable teammate. Loved Iowa, and Iowa loved him. And so not surprising his sons get to go there. And obviously Kenyon married well, and they had big, beautiful children who, you know, are taking the Hawkeyes to a completely different level. He could do it inside and out. He could do it off the bounce and with his shot. And he's got great, great length. And he's going to be a pro like his brother. And, you know, the Serbian frontline player, and I pronounce his name wrong sometimes, but he's just a great player. And I think Rabacha, he's a force down in there. So the matchup, we talked about Jalen Williams and Jani Broome, and Dylan Carwell and Chris Moore, how we match up in 4 and 5, I think is going to be extremely important. You know, Perkins and Ulis are tough. McCaffrey's a phenomenal playmaker and passer. And Fran's got this team. You know, they're the number 3 ranked offense as far as offensive efficiency. They don't turn the ball over. They shoot the crap out of it. They're a dangerous, dangerous team in March because the way they run their offense with great freedom. And they go on runs. They can score. They can score points in bunches. And they got great length.
Coach, before we
not many weaknesses.
Coach, before we let you run, you've been at this for a long time in many different stops: Southern Indiana, Milwaukee, Tennessee, and Auburn. Do you get nostalgic? I know you're focused on the task at hand, but you'd all get nostalgic when you look back how many times you've been in postseason play.
You know what? You don't get nostalgic, but you do take note of it. And I'll tell you though, when you hear your name called on Selection Sunday, it is emotional. It is special. For these players, some this will be their only chance to have that one shining moment. For others, you know, they'll have an opportunity over a 3 or 4 year career. But there's nothing like March Madness. There's nothing like the big dance. And there's nothing like the opportunity to win 2 games and get to the Sweet 16. And that's what we're trying to do.
Last thing I'll ask you, Bruce Pearl, before we let you run. Just the SEC, I'm always interested in the narratives heading into the tournament. You've seen it. You've coached up against it all throughout the year. To get 8 teams in, what does that mean for the SEC?
Well, it means that it now runs sort of parallel with every other sport in the SEC. I mean, we dominate college football, baseball, gymnastics, you know, tennis and golf and softball and, you know, swimming and golf. And it's crazy how good this league is. Men's basketball has been behind in many regards, but now, you know, I think that we are right there with whoever could be the best Power 5 conference in men's basketball. The SEC is in the discussion, and that just wasn't the case 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Coach, always appreciate our conversations. Thanks so much, and good luck coming up on Thursday in Birmingham.
Okay, thanks, Zach.
There you go. Great stuff with Bruce Pearl, the head coach of the Auburn Tigers, back in the NCAA tournament, where they've just done a really good job under his watch, and he's a tremendous coach and has success everywhere he does go. All righty, we will take a break. When we come on back, we know Jalen Ramsey is getting traded to the Miami Dolphins. What does that mean for the expectations of the Dolphins this upcoming season and also still to come? At 8:40 p.m. Eastern, 5:40 p.m. Pacific, Jim Larranaga dancing once again in the NCAA tournament. They were in the Elite Eight last year. We'll see how far they could take it this year with Miami. So Coach L will stop by later on in this hour. Let's get the break right here, and we'll come on back in 5 minutes.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So we didn't really spend much time on this yesterday, but we know that Jalen Ramsey is getting traded to the Miami Dolphins from the LA Rams. We knew this divorce was coming in LA as the Rams are just in such a bizarre spot where, like, Sean McVay is there, but we don't know how much longer he wants to be the coach. Matthew Stafford is there, but we don't know how much longer they want him, and it's not feasible to move his contract yet. It would make sense if they start to, you know, take trade and field trade calls on Cooper Kupp and Aaron Donald, because what, Aaron Donald plays maybe 2 more years at most from some of the retirement conversation. It just shows you in this league how quickly you think you have a window and how long you think you could have a window, but then how quickly you could lose it. And they went all in. They won a championship. It's worth it. So if the end or if the next few years are really ugly, they will always be known as world champions, and it's fine. But I just don't get the direction of the Rams. And you look at a team like Miami, on the other hand, they're going for it now. And you look at the team that Miami has put together, you bring back Raheem Mostert. You have Tyreek Hill. You have Jaylen Waddle. On defense at the deadline, you go get Bradley Chubb. We'll see if he could ascend to the player that we think he could be if he could stay healthy. You go get Jalen Ramsey. You have some other pieces on that defensive side of the ball. It's like I look at the Dolphins this year, and are they a perfect roster? No, they're not perfect by any stretch, but they are a good roster, and the Dolphins are a good team. And are there some concerns on the offensive line? Sure. They got better the last year bringing in Teron Armstead. You look at the defensive side of the ball. Christian Wilkins is really good. I like Jalen Phillips a lot. He was a tremendous player for them. In the secondary, they are good with Xavien Howard. And you look at now adding Jalen Ramsey. But the biggest concern, Hickey, continues to be the health of the quarterback. And for Tua Tagovailoa, it's not a question of if he could play. He showed you last year when healthy, he could play and he could be a guy that looks like a top 10 quarterback in this league and a guy that you could win with. But it's going to be how long will he be able to play? Because we talk about two concussions that we know of, and some people thought it was three last year. Like, I think it was three. I know they say the one against Buffalo was a back. I don't buy that for a second. But if this guy gets a concussion this year, I don't think it's your typical recovery time for a concussion, because there's a lot more public pressure and there's a lot more public attention when it comes to Tua Tagovailoa because of all what we saw last year with the concussions that he suffered going from that Bills game to that Bengals game and how that was in a four-day span. So like if a player may only miss a week or 2 weeks because of concussion, usually I think it's doubled that bare minimum for Tua Tagovailoa, and I know he wants to play. I know his family wants to play. But eventually, like, if he suffers another concussion, depending on the severity of it, you almost, like, don't want him to play football anymore because you care about the human being as well. So I look at the Dolphins. We thought there was a lot of pressure on Tua last year, Hickey. There's even more pressure this year because this team keeps on getting better and better. Like last year, they made the playoffs. They almost beat the Bills in Buffalo with Skylar Thompson at the quarterback position. And for them to go where they want to go, there's not many flaws on this team. Like, it's not perfect, but there's not many flaws. They need their quarterback to be healthy. And if Tua is hurt, I'm sorry, Mike White and Skylar Thompson or, you know, whoever it is, doesn't really move the needle for me. You're not beating Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes or Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence in a playoff game if you have to start Mike White or Skylar Thompson. You get close because you have a good team, but you're not going to walk out with the victory. And there's a ton of pressure on Tua once again this year.
Pressure obviously different last year is to perform this year to stay healthy.
Yeah, and it sucks to say it that way, but it's the truth.
Oh, no, 100%. And the one, you know, look, you know me. I've been advocating them to upgrade and move off of Tua, even though I'd like to, but you can trust his health. The one thing I'll give the Dolphins credit, though, is that if you're going to stick with Tua,
they went all in.
Then at least they are doing what the 49ers have done, and you are going to then build the best possible team you can to almost minimize the impact of the quarterback. And we see part of the reason why the 49ers are able to go with a third-string quarterback all the way to the NFC title game is because outside of quarterback, they had no weakness. Now, you're right. It's this Dolphins roster is not what they have in San Francisco.
Niners roster's better,
but they're trying. You get Jalen Ramsey. You know, obviously have a great 1-2 punch at receiver. Maybe you go get Austin Eckler at running back. You got to get now pieces around Tua and around just this entire team to where if you're going to have a quarterback that's injury prone, you then have to minimize as much as you possibly can the impact of the quarterback when he's not there. And that means basically getting all-star level players, or I guess in this case, Pro Bowl level players at almost every position. It's hard to do. That's why a lot of teams rather get the quarterback and worry about everything else instead of worry about everyone else and then forget about the quarterback. But that's what you got to do for your Miami, because that's the bed you're making now by extending Tua's fifth-year option and by all offseason long, standing confident, saying that Tua is your guy.
So we look around other destinations in the NFL or other quarterback situations. Who are other quarterbacks under pressure? I've come up with four quarterbacks and then one situation because I just can't narrow it down to one quarterback. So take Tua out of it because that's what started this conversation. Going into this year, I think there's an enormous amount of pressure on Dak Prescott. Now, he may already get an extension by week one, and we talk about pressure in many different ways. Is it pressure on meeting the expectations? And if you don't, do you lose your job or are you still the guy next year? Like, I don't think Dak is in any danger of losing his job or the Cowboys moving on from him because they've already doubled and tripled down that he is their guy. And I still do question, and I don't believe Dak could win a Super Bowl. But the last 2 years, we've seen Dak and this team have really good regular seasons. Now, Dak did not have a good regular season as a player this past year, but the team, the last 2 years, have had good enough regular seasons where you look at them, and maybe it could be part of it being a lack of depth in the conference, but either way you want to spin it, we viewed the Cowboys as a top three team in the NFC the last 2 years. And come playoff time, 2 years ago, wild card round, Jimmy G tried to give them the game, and Dak couldn't take advantage of it. And this past year, whoop-de-damn-do, I know you beat Brady, but that Bucs team was horrible. They were below 500. And then you go up against the 49ers, and everyone tells you how great this 49ers roster is. They were able to keep the 49ers in check. And Dak in that offense, once losing Tony Pollard, couldn't do jack in that game. So I look at Dak this year. You don't get the excuse anymore of Kellen Moore, who everyone said was this great offensive coordinator. I have never been a huge fan of Kellen Moore, but he's now out. McCarthy's taken over the full reins of the offense. I know Schottenheimer is there, but there's no more excuses. Like, for me, if Dak and McCarthy don't get bare minimum to an NFC title game this year, I don't get why there's any reason to ever believe that they're going to get it right, because that defense, you never know how long a window exists. That defense, Ryan, is ready to go, but the offense hasn't been on par with the defense. Pollard's back good. Zeke is declining, but could still be a productive player in this league. You got CeeDee Lamb. We'll see what happens at the tight end situation, because it looks like they're going to lose Dalton Schultz. Like, they got to find a way to get to an NFC title game next year, someplace they haven't been since 1995, and I don't expect it to happen until they get the job done in the playoffs.
I would agree. They've lost the benefit of the doubt. And honestly, I'm not sure if Jerry cares at this point, because it doesn't matter what the results are on the field. Every offseason, it feels like all he talks about is extending Dak, keeping Dak. They love Dak. So there's pressure on him, but it's different pressure we're looking at compared to the owner of the Cowboys looking at.
Another quarterback that's under a tremendous amount of pressure. You have gone through this drama, song, and dance all offseason, Aaron Rodgers. I think we're getting the decision tomorrow that he's going to go to the Jets when he makes an appearance at 1 p.m. Eastern on the Pat McAfee show. Aaron Rodgers, I know he had a thumb injury last year. He can't look like the Aaron Rodgers he did last year. He's got a bare minimum when he's starting for the Jets next year, get the Jets to the playoffs. There's an enormous amount of pressure on Aaron Rodgers after winning back-to-back MVPs. He didn't make the playoffs, and if you get what you want, and that's to go to the Jets, I don't want to hear any ifs, ands, or buts if you don't get to the postseason.
What's reasonable expectations for him next year?
If he's on the Jets?
Yes.
Make the playoffs.
That's it. And then from there, it's mission accomplished.
Maybe win a playoff game. Like, that's the highest I could go. Do you think they're better than Kansas City? Do you think they're better than Cincinnati, just for starters?
No. And like, you said it before, they're not a Super Bowl contender, and they're not going to win a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. I would agree with you. I'm just kind of curious, all this song and dance going on, feel like what are, like, there's a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers, but it's like, what would actually, is it a Super Bowl? Like,
I think a super success next year would be winning a playoff game. Like, you go first year with the young team, they have a killer defense, you get some of your guys on offense, you incorporate what you have there as well, an offense rookie of the year in Garrett Wilson, maybe Breece Hall was on his way to winning offense rookie of the year, stays healthy. You know, they should be able to get into the playoffs and be a team that you don't want to face. I'm not saying they're going to go win multiple playoff games. I don't think they're going to go to the Super Bowl because Rodgers has his own problems in the postseason. But Rodgers has to play well in the postseason and get them to the postseason. That's what needs to happen next year. Another quarterback, Lamar Jackson. I don't think he is going to get a deal done. I would think he's going to be on the Ravens, but I don't know that with 110% certainty, because all it takes is one team to make the offer, and the Ravens don't want to match it. But for Lamar Jackson, you got to get back to looking like an MVP, and most importantly, you got to stay healthy. Because if you don't stay healthy, then it's back-to-back-to-back years where the season has ended and you are on the bench and not being able to help your team. So I do think there's pressure on Lamar, and especially if he goes into this year without a contract, you got to go ball out and really make the Ravens pay for not paying you and really make your point known on the football field. I'll give you two more. Josh Allen. Now, Josh Allen's not going anywhere in Buffalo. We know that. But you saw last year there be a lot asked of Josh Allen, and you saw some of the old Josh Allen pop up with the turnovers. Now, he's still a remarkable player, still a player that you want to build your team around, but I don't know where that relationship is at with Stephon Diggs. I would think Gabe Davis would be on the roster, but you never know. We'll see if they add anyone into that running back room. Von Miller, can you get him back, and can he be the Von Miller of old? I would have no reason to believe otherwise, because we asked that when he left Denver and we saw what he did with the LA Rams. But we talk about windows, and you never know how long the window is left open for. The Bills, this is the first year that the Bills really disappointed. Like when they lost that game 13 seconds and the game got to overtime up against Kansas City, yeah, it was bad. But last year was the first year where it was like Super Bowl or bust. And they failed to even get out of the second round, and you barely beat a team in Miami that was starting Skylar Thompson, and then you just got absolutely embarrassed by the Cincinnati Bengals in your building. So Josh Allen, you got to find a way to take advantage and capitalize on this window that your team has. And one more, it's a 49ers quarterback situation. I don't know if it's going to be Purdy. I don't know if it's going to be Trey Lance, but you just see them add Hargrave. You know how great of a defense that they have. They got Christian McCaffrey. You have Deebo Samuel. You got Brandon Ayuk. Like, you got a lot of pieces there. And whether it's Purdy or whether it's Trey Lance, there is an opportunity to not only be the guy now, but be the guy for the foreseeable future and win a Super Bowl. Like, this has been a team that got to a Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo. They got to another NFC title game with Jimmy Garoppolo. They got to an NFC title game with Brock Purdy. It's got to be go time for someone, and I don't know who that's going to be, if it's Purdy or Lance. But someone has to step up and really take that baton and show me that you could be the guy for the foreseeable future. Any other quarterbacks you look at, Hickey, and you say, okay, they're really under a lot of pressure for this year when I give you Tua, Dak, Rodgers, Lamar, whoever's playing for the 49ers, and then Josh Allen?
None more than the five you mentioned. I think there's pressure on Derek Carr to play well, especially considering the division that you're in where the Panthers are going to draft number one overall. Assuming, let's just say, that Lamar Jackson is not go to the Falcons. You know, the Falcons with Desmond Ridder, and you have the Buccaneers of maybe Baker Mayfield. You got to look, you don't have to play that well in order to win the division. You got to play well.
I'll give you two more. Now, he's a stud, but Justin Herbert is definitely someone that has to have a playoff win this year. And the other one, whenever Kyler Murray gets back, the way they could get out of that deal by 2025, even though he's coming off an ACL injury and who knows when he's going to come back, the clock does start to tick. All right, we'll take a break. Miami went to the Elite Eight last year. They're back in the NCAA tournament once again. We'll see how far they could go this time around. Jim Larranaga, who's no stranger to the big dance, will join us on the Zach Gelb Show when we return.
There's nothing better than feeling comfortable in your own shoes. And that doesn't mean flopping down on the couch with bunny slippers. Maybe you're a parent raising a little rock star, or a tech nomad working from anywhere and jumping from one thing to the next. Whoever you are, Allbirds wants you to be comfortable in your actual shoes too. Their wool runners, pipers, and loungers are designed for a level of coziness that makes you feel like you can do anything. You might even forget you're wearing them. And their shoes are so stylish, they go perfectly with a wear-whatever-I-want attitude. Allbirds is all about loving Mother Nature, too, because no one wants to leave a bad footprint. Each shoe is carefully crafted from natural materials that tread lightly on our planet. From ZQ-certified Merino wool to a bouncy midsole made from sweet foam, the world's first carbon-negative EVA material made from sugarcane.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
We continue. It is The Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. We all remember the great run the Hurricanes of Miami had last year in the NCAA tournament, making it to the Elite Eight. The Hurricanes are back in the big dance, and they will do battle coming up on Friday at 7:25 p.m. Eastern. this go around as a fifth seed as they'll play 12 seed Drake. And now joining us is the head coach of the Miami Hurricanes in Jim Larrañaga. Coach, congrats on another trip to the NCAA tournament. Appreciate you doing this.
It's my pleasure, and we are also very excited representing the ACC as the regular season co-champion.
Coach, I love the videos that I saw of you on Sunday. The game just looks like it never gets old to you. It seems like you enjoy this more than ever. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, you know, at my age, you appreciate every opportunity. I coached in the mid-majors for 25 years, and getting to the NCAA tournament was extremely difficult. Now, coaching in the ACC, I really appreciate the opportunity to go there in back-to-back years and 5 years since I've been at Miami.
Why are you still able to connect with your players? Because you wonder when you get a little bit older and you're dealing with kids that are in their teenage years, if you are going to be able to connect with them. Why do you think that part of the game has always been able to keep you fresh?
Well, I would say this. I'm a teacher at heart. I love working with the players. I love practice. I love seeing guys improve. And I think the players appreciate when I'm helping them. You know, they don't always listen to what I have to say, but I demonstrate my knowledge and experience by showing them videos of players they like. So I might send a player a highlight tape of someone like Hakeem Olajuwon. I might send them a tape of Rip Hamilton, you know, and they'll often text me back and say, "Oh, I really like that tape. Who is that guy?" So they enjoy it, and I enjoy hanging out with them.
Now, as we're talking about on the sideline, obviously, this is so exciting for you. I know you just signed a new contract through 2026. How much longer do you plan on coaching?
Well, honestly, you know, you never know when you're done until you're done. And right now I'm just enjoying coaching too much. I'm just going to keep doing it as long as I can. When the day comes when I feel like, you know, I've had enough, I'm going to retire. But I don't have any other hobbies. You know, so basketball has been my life, and it's also been my hobby. And I try to get better every year, and I try to help my coaches and players achieve their goals and realize their dreams. So I'm just going to keep doing it as long as I can. Jim Boeheim is 77 years old. He's a lot older than me, and he kept doing it.
We've seen some coaches, Jim Larrañaga, though, retire because maybe they don't want to deal with NIL and the transfer portal. How have you adapted to those changes in the game?
Well, I always said that, you know, just tell me what the rules are and I'll follow the rules. You know, transfer portal. Well, we've had transfers during the course of my career that have transferred, sat out a year, and did great for us. And most recently with the portal, they didn't have to sit out the year, but guys like Charlie Moore and Jordan Miller this year, Norshad Omir and Nigel Pack, they fit into our program beautifully and have helped us stay very relevant. The NIL, I'm not involved in that at all. You know, so I tell our players, get yourself an agent and negotiate. Find people who want to sponsor you. And that's what our guys have done.
Jim Larrañaga here with us. What does a player transferring into Miami or joining Miami as a freshman need to understand about your culture and what you expect out of them?
Yeah, very simply, we have a philosophy that we greatly believe. And number one, we want players who have a positive attitude. We say life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react to it. Second, we want them to make a total commitment to being the best that they can be on the court and in the classroom. And third, we always want them to behave in a first-class manner, to be role models in our community. And the players who come in, you just look at Jordan Miller, who transferred in from George Mason. He's a perfect role model. If you listen to his interviews, he's smart, he's articulate, he's friendly, he's engaging. And that goes doubly for Norshad Omir, Nigel Pack, Isaiah Wong. So, you know, we've got great kids, and they represent our program very well.
Talking to Jim Larrañaga, they will go up against Drake in Miami, a fifth seed, back in the NCAA tournament. Coach, we know last year you guys went on a great run as a 10 seed all the way to the Elite Eight. What did that experience mean for your kids? And could it be a benefit when the ball goes up in the air and you start a new chapter of the NCAA tournament coming up on Friday?
Well, we have 7 returning players who remember very well the run, but we also have 6 newcomers, 2 transfers, and 4 freshmen. So the kind of the balance has been very helpful to us. We've got a good blend of experience with youthful enthusiasm. And hopefully that will be beneficial to us Friday night. But we also know Drake is a real veteran team. Now, their guys are 4th-year seniors, 5th-year seniors. They got the player of the year in DeVries. They're an excellent team, an excellent program. Coach DeVries have done a great job. They're winning 20 games or more every year. So it should be a great matchup.
You talked about Tucker and then also his dad. You know, you have the coach and player relationship and that being father-son. You've gone through that in your life, coaching your kids before. How do you kind of reflect on that experience? Because I've had some coaches, Coach Jim Lyram, and they could tell me they love it, and then other coaches say it gets a little bit difficult when you have to coach your own kid.
Well, here's what I would tell you, and it's something that Dick Bennett, who coached his son Tony Bennett, told me when my sons were thinking about coming to play for me. He said, when you win and your son plays really well, there's no better feeling. He said, if you win but your son doesn't play so well, well, at least you won, so you feel pretty good. If you lose but your son plays really well, you say, well, at least my son played really good. And then if you lose and your son plays bad, there's no worse feeling. So, you know, with Coach DeVries, they've done a lot of winning, and his son has played great. So he doesn't have too many worries.
Coach Jim Larrañaga, for the players that have returned to your program, they have the experience of going to an Elite Eight, but how is it tricky to kind of make this a new season? Because a lot of times you have guys that have been a part of that run, their goal the entire year is to not only get back to that spot, but improve on it.
And that's really the vision that we have. We have a lot of guys who loved the experience last year of getting to the Elite Eight. And this year, they want to do it again, and if they possibly can, go even further. And the newcomers are, you know, all into that. They love the idea that we've made the NCAA, that we're the regular season ACC champs, and they're just excited about playing Friday for the first time, representing the University of Miami in the big dance.
There's always going to be people that associate you with the legendary run that you did go on with George Mason to the Final Four. You've now been at Miami since 2011. How do you kind of look back at this chapter of you being the head coach of the Hurricanes, and what do you want people to know about it?
Well, I spent 14 years at George Mason and loved every minute of it. We had some great runs. But I've been at Miami 12 years, and I'm hoping to surpass my run at George Mason with my run at the University of Miami. And every year is such a different year. We've got different players, different teams. But I look at our championship team in 12-13 with Shane Larkin, Durant Scott, and those guys is kind of a great life experience that there'd be nothing better than to repeat that. And we were able to win another regular season title 10 years later, but it'd be great to go on another great run like we did last year.
Do you feel like this is maybe the best team you've ever coached?
Well, when we're 100% healthy, we're awfully hard to beat. But when we lost to Florida State, we didn't have Nigel Pack. When we lost to Duke, we didn't have Norshad Omier. So we got to hope that we can get 100% healthy and play our best basketball during March Madness. So we're excited. We got our fingers crossed, but hopefully everybody can stay healthy or get healthy.
You mentioned the injury to Norshad Omier. What are the chances that we see him on the court Friday with that ankle injury?
Well, I've got my fingers crossed. He's working very, very hard. We got a great trainer in Sam Johnson. He's spending a ton of time with Norshad. Norshad is very, very focused on rehabbing the ankle, and hopefully, you know, he didn't practice yesterday or today, so he's still got a ways to go. But hopefully by Friday, you know, we'll get the thumbs up.
If you guys don't get the good news that you're looking for, how do you plan to kind of replace him?
Well, it's really in the hands of Anthony Walker and AJ Casey. Those are the guys who backed up Norshad all season. But we match up pretty well at most positions. Their big guy, Brody, we just don't have anybody with that size and bulk. He weighs 275, so it's hard to match up with him. But we got a number of guys that will chip in, and we can score the ball pretty well. Even against Duke without Norshad, we scored 78 points. So hopefully we can have a very good offensive day and do a great job defensively.
Coach, before we let you run, last year I got a chance to spend a few minutes with Isaiah Wong. Was really impressed with him, and we all know he's been in your program for 4 years and had a monster season and really came onto the scene in 2020. How have you seen him get better from that great sophomore season that he had a few years ago?
Yeah, when Isaiah came in as a freshman, he was about 6'2", 162 pounds. He's
wow.
Now like 6'3 and change, 185. He's strong as can be. His offensive game, as good as it was as a freshman and sophomore, he's just expanded it. He's a terrific three-point shooter. He's really finding the open man and facilitating. His defense is better. So he's just improved. There's a really good reason why he's the ACC Player of the Year and an All-American. So I love Isaiah. He's just so much fun to be around and to coach.
Coach, good luck coming up on Friday. We're looking forward to another run for the Hurricanes. We appreciate the time. Thank you.
My pleasure.
There you go. Jim Larranaga. Always enjoy when we get to catch up with him on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will take a timeout when we return in 5 minutes. We get back into the Aaron Rodgers conversation as we're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. All we know, Rodgers will chat with Pat McAfee tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern. And, oh yeah, by the way, Alan Lazard is going to be a member of the New York Jets. So you could line him up, figure it all out where Rodgers is going to go just based off that info.